Oh,
I get you, but I feel like as much as I hate the tweet at the airline move, if you're stuck at the airport with kids and you got a little bit following, like the shame that results from tweeting at airline is worth getting you out of whatever bad situation you're in.
Last summer, I had an egregious incident, and I started to craft a tweet. And my wife said, "Once you tweet at a brand, you are a guy who tweets at brands." And I've never, I haven't gotten out of my mind since.
Oh, it's you can't wife, undo it. So the point of the matter is that, to
you
me
can't
at least,
undo it.
It's the company that you are with. If your wife was opposed to it, you're fine. The problem comes up is if your wife is also fed up and you need to find a solution, and you got three kids in airport, or like, no. I have not done
she,
it.
She was fed up. Understand. She was fed up, but she has a sense of shame.
You don't know what it means. If she said don't do it, then wasn't fully fed up. You don't understand fed up.
I just want to know what egregious thing happened where Kevin Clark put his marriage and his reputation on the line.
Oh, it was one of those prepaid parking things that they didn't honor.
Oh, that's not.
It was
not,
like a monthly parking
what?
Thing.
That's not egregious.
No, you're gonna, it was like, bad. There's like a 10-minute story. Yeah, it was kind of that. Yeah. But now I'm going to be with a big box retailer. Okay.
I was going to say, that's punching down at a brand. A big box retailer.
I'm in a feud with one of the top 100 companies in America. But it's happening entirely via DM.
Wow.
And it will never go public.
Welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where Kevin Clark is going to reveal the name of this top 100 big box retailer by the time we get through our A block. That is Kevin Clark. That is Dominique Foxworth. It is, I guess, the afternoon now after Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. It is Memorial Day, Alabaster. We showed up to work because that is debatable culture.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, I don't.
Which
I don't,
one of us
I don't
is like Jimmy that. Butler?
Ooh.
I mean, I feel like based on the show conversation, I'm the closest we got to Jimmy Butler. I mean, I'd be willing to take a rational shot and be cool with the result after you two. Cowards.
Max Struss.
Wow. The man's name is Struss.
Struss. Alabaster, start us off here.
So last night was we should get into it. Last night was a topsy-turvy game. It felt like the Celtics were in control and then just were gacking the last 7 minutes as the Heat came back. But they were up by 13 with like three and a half minutes left. And then it became a one-possession game where Jimmy Butler took the shot but didn't have the legs for it. And my question to you is, does it feel like the right team won the East?
That was the wrong phrase. Topsy-turvy does not do any sort of anything for us trying to sell this game. It was topsy-turvy. It was loosey-goosey. That's how we're selling a game that was like two franchises, whole identities on the line, coming down to a last-second shot. Does it feel like the right team won the East? I feel like the conversation around the shot that Dominique mentioned, the Jimmy Butler shot, tells you that the right team won the East. Because the whole conversation around that shot was, he needs to take this shot because they're absolutely going to lose this game in overtime if he doesn't hit a three right here. Like, everybody is so phenomenally defending this terrible shot on the premise that if he doesn't take it, they definitely are going to lose if they play, like, two more minutes in this game.
I don't know. Who's defending it? I don't still see anybody defending it. I was coming here prepared to defend it because I assumed that you guys would be like reasonable and not the fact that there was plenty of time on the shot clock that Jimmy Butler, like the fact that he's shooting well from three in this game or series, does not shoot threes, and then that when he
no
does take
was,
to the back.
That no one was in the paint, literally no one was standing inside the 3-point arc
and
when he released this
Max
shot.
Max is fresh off big 3-pointer. Like, if you want the three, that's the guy you look for. Like, I was fully expecting you guys to point out all Diggy zig my zag, and here, alas, I'm surprised. They're like, hey, they were tired. You got to win it right there, which also is not true. I mean, I know they were tired, but you don't have to win it right here.
But okay. Now there's Kevin, where do you land on this? Because I turned on First Take this morning, and I just hear a lot of, like, he had the right. He had the constitutional right. He deserved that shot. Never mind if it was good or not. He deserved it.
So there was one big problem, and it was a personnel problem, which was that Mike Breen was not there.
Yeah.
And if Mike Breen was there, he's there to say bang, and the entire situation is different. I love Mark Jones, seems like a very nice guy. He didn't have a bang in his bag. And so that's one thing.
Bangless.
you have to note when you're going into that shot. I think that the question about whether or not the right team won the East, the right team won the series. The right team may be in alternate universes, maybe with better injury luck, Milwaukee wins the East. Maybe with better injury luck, Philadelphia wins the East. But in this series, you saw what this was last night. It took a basically the Celtics stopped playing coherent basketball for the second half of the fourth quarter. The Heat go on an 11-0 run. I thought that the shot was fine. I'm going to defend the shot a little bit. Because, first of all, I think the problem was that Jimmy Butler played 47 minutes and, 40 seconds before that?
Yeah, all of them. All of them.
Every second. And he was tired. But that's a byproduct of the fact that it was it parts a one-man team. And so I'm okay with that. I actually do agree with the first take line that he's earned the right to do this. This is what you do. Like, you had one shot to win the game. That's just sort of what happens here. And everybody on the Heat said they thought it was going in. Jimmy Butler, after the game, said his teammates were glad he did it. Who else was going to do something? I mean, I know, okay, Horford shuffling backwards. Fine, do whatever you want to do. But he had one shot to win the game off an 11-0 run. I think you take it. You try to end the game right there. Fine.
I'm not upset with that. But arguing that he had the right to, I think, is like kind of weird. And also, like pretending like it was also a good shot is kind of weird, given all the circumstances. Again, I was expecting to be the other side of this, so I'm surprised by you because there was a normal, reasonable argument is why plenty of time on the will you take it's like that Kareem, and you're like, hey Kareem, why don't you shoot a three and instead of the sky hook you've perfected? Like, Jimmy Butler drives to the basket and finishes under contact and gets air. Like, that's the purpose of all of Butler basketball. And if there is no reason not to that, like, there's no time constraint, there's no matchup that beneficial, like there is no reason at that moment not to at least try your first option first. Like, I understand that criticism. And I did had a right, like, of course, they're not going to cut him or trade him based on it, which I do for a lesser player, but you don't got a right to be dumb. That to me feels a bit of a stretch.
There's an old phrase I'm sure you've heard in football locker rooms: fatigue makes cowards of us all. Jimmy Butler is the first person who was so tired he gained bravery. Like, he was not he actually got more confident as the game went on, and with 20 seconds left in the biggest game he's going to play in his career. I guess not counting finals, but that was in the bubble, so there's an asterisk, as we know.
No,
bubble title. One of the biggest moments in his career, he wanted to take that shot. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I don't think it's stupid.
Well, here's to me, Dominique, the best defense of the Jimmy Butler shot, and this is now a zag in response to a zig, is simply that Jimmy Butler was trying to do the coolest thing possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to reverse engineer the montage. Even Spo in the post game, and again, Spo is his coach, it is wise of him to fully embrace Jimmy. And maybe he did truly believe, Spo's a basketball genius, that was the right shot there, that he was open enough, even though he was 6-for-19 on the year on pull-up threes, and it's terrible from three. So even though all of that is so, the idea that, man, it would be so badass if this went in. Like, that seemed to be the best reason to take that shot.
I got two important notes that I want to know if you all exist the same way I did. When Al Horford blocked Max Strus's shot with five to go in the first quarter, I had wished that I had access to in-game betting. Because at that moment, I knew it was over. That was one of those plays that only happens in game, or maybe you only really remember them in games that you end winning.
Yeah,
it was done. It was nothing they could do. The other point is, to your montage point, the entire game, there were a few players who I experienced it this way. They were playing the game, imagining how they we talked about the next day. And top of the list is Victor Oladipo. Victor Oladipo played this entire game as if this was going to be the crowning moment of the Victor Oladipo is back tour. And it was stressing me out a little. That's all.
All right. I just want to put you in Jimmy Butler's mindset.
Okay.
His team, as currently constructed, they're paying Duncan Robinson $90 million to podcast. Okay. what else is he doing besides podcasting?
That's a very good point.
He was taken out of the rotation because he can't defend the pick and roll, because the Celtics knew exactly what to do with him. Oladipo, as you said, was had first take in his mind the entire time. What's JJ Redick going to say about me? Bam, inconsistent. I mean, I just, Kyle Lowry. This is a stat that Bobby Marks tweeted out. Kyle Lowry, when playing defense this year, opponents blew by him on 44% of his drives. 44% of opponents' drives. What was your?
I feel like I my first reaction to that stat is I feel like blow by is another editorial decision there. What is a blow by? What is a blow versus just a hard drive pass? Right.
I think you know it when you see it. I think you know when if you're the second spectrum guy, you see Kyle Lowry out there. And let me tell you something. He looks often like people are blowing by him. I also think just visually, it just look. I mean, he's not moving laterally very well.
Right. Some hairs on his defender's head.
Probably a little exasperated afterwards, kind of like, like a shrug. Maybe there's a shrug involved. I think there's a couple of tells about a blow-by.
They're just
there's a couple of tells that Dominique is trying to speak right now. Yeah. We cannot hear him. So I'm going to tell him that so he can fix his microphone while we debate whether a blow-by is an actual stat.
Wait, I was going to ask. Unfortunate we're having technical difficulties because I was going to ask Dominique what his blow-by rate was when he played in the NFL. Because that's a stat I would like to zero. Dominique is indicating it was zero.
My blow-by stat was 1 million because everybody blew by me. I'm Dominique. This is definitely Dominique's voice.
I just think that there's other sports where you could get a really good handle on blow-by. I had never seen this with Kyle Lowry. So this stat before I saw it with Kyle Lowry and Bobby Marks last night. So we're in the new frontier. We can quantify blow-bys, and Kyle Lowry is not very good at this particular stat. Now, all of this to say, I started out making a point before we got into the weeds on blow-bys.
Jimmy Butler probably looked around and you had a point.
And said, Jimmy Butler probably looked around and said, I've been playing for 47 minutes and 40 seconds. I can't do this in overtime. I want this to end right now. He had the capability to end the game and end his misery and end staring at Victor Oladipo and end looking at Kyle Lowry for at least a couple of days. He didn't have to do that anymore if he made that shot, and he just decided to take matters into his own hands. That's what Jimmy Butler was thinking.
I would like to apologize for my technical difficulties.
Jimmy Butler felt like someone who had just spent like a week and a half in Miami. He was like, I gotta get out of here, man. Like, this whole series kind of felt that way also. Yeah. Just like dizzying highs. Like, I've never felt so good. I have a tan. It's amazing. And then you have these psychological lows that make you contemplate whether any of this was real, whether any of this felt as good as you thought, whether now you have these mysterious injuries. Where do these bruises come from? Yeah. That's what like Jimmy Butler's whole like feeling
it's
was
not by muted, muted.
Oh, here we go. Dominique's back.
Okay. Well, I apologize for technical difficulties. They've caused a lot of problems, including knocking Pablo off game because I mean, when Kevin said, you know, when you see it, you failed to make a porn reference. Prince was so un-Pablo.
That's what I was doing.
The Supreme Court.
I know.
Court,
it was a clear, obvious Pablo setup. And then we did a whole few minutes on blow-by again. Pablo, in his element, somehow misses the Pablo shot. They threw Pablo alley-oop by rim, and he took it down, dribbled it out, and started the possession.
I hate that Dominique gained his microphone back and proceeded to make two correct points.
No, it's me though. It's because I was like head spinning in the corner of the court, distracting you from your jump. So I apologize. You were distracted.
Apologies to the audience, to Potter Stewart, Supreme Court Justice, who compared pornography to a thing he knows when he sees, and of course to the strip club that James Harden loves, that is called blow-bys. Alabaster.
There we go. Apologize to me for that joke. But what I really want to talk about is the Celtics, because we've talked about Jimmy Butler's shot a lot, and not the team that not just won the series, but other than a few quarters here and there, not to do the quarter counting thing, but for most of the series, they dominated. They were the better team, other than small spurts. And do you guys feel like this was the best team in the East? The reason I'm saying that is because they've been anonymous. It's been defense. It's been strength in numbers. It's been bad games from Jason Tatum that somehow this team in the finals against the Warriors.
Yeah, for the podcast audience, the sound you heard as Alabaster was reading that question or giving us that question was Kevin Clark reacting to me reacting to the phrase small spurts. And figuring out, what am I going to do with this here? What am I going
to
do with this?
You have to. You have to do something.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But
I mean, I think it's even.
I think you know what I would do.
Yeah, yeah. I made a joke several rounds ago in the playoffs about how we overreact to like in-game gym adjustments and or the between game adjustments. And I have to admit that I tend to not recognize, but I recognize in the course of this series, it seemed to me like passing out of the Heat's trap, forcing the Heat to rotate in situations that made it a lot easier for Jason Tatum to get open and make shots. All that said, Jason Tatum hit some really hard damn shots. So like it I don't know where to end up with this. I think we need credit to coach for what he's been able to do in his first year to outcoach what most people think is the best in basketball. And now we go up against maybe the 1B or 1A of coaches in basketball without talent advantage. So he did have a slight talent advantage in the Eastern Conference Finals despite the injury. So it'll be interesting to see. But that's what I walk away with this thinking. Like, they found him at head coach. Nothing else. They don't win this next series. No. They found that.
And Kevin, like the card that Alabaster put down just now, I mean, this is something we should acknowledge, right? They were 20-21 midway through the season. We've made fun of them. Yes, of course. The new year, what a magical thing. We are always like slicing and dicing stats to make it complimentary to the Celtics. But they are the fourth team to reach the finals after being below 500 midway through the year. Like, this does not happen. All of the stuff about this team underachieving is true. Ime Udoka gets huge credit for that. But Jason Tatum too, man. Like, you know, watching him pass the ball in this game, watching him find his teammates repeatedly, even though that teammate wound up being Marcus Smart for five straight shots toward the end of the game. Like, he was trying to get everybody involved. And I think that is a development in Jason Tatum's game that's going to serve them well in the finals.
I totally agree. And I also say, I mean, the heartbeat of the team is still the defense. And you're not going to believe this, but I have a stat. It's via The Ringer, actually. And this is why I think we always underrate defense until it's too late and some team is playing in a championship game and we go, oh my God, this team can win because we didn't see it coming on the front end. So here is the stat. The Celtics in half-court sets on defense have limited opponents to 87 points per 100 half-court plays, okay? If over a full season, that would mean they're making these playoff teams into the worst half-court team in basketball, okay? The Pistons and the Thunder were better in half-court sets than the Celtics are allowing playoff teams to be. That's called elite defense. And also say, I mean, this is a team that's getting better because of that, okay? And what's interesting to me, a couple of years ago, this is about the NFL, but on a podcast I said it.
Hold on. Can we take a second? Before you get to that, I just wanted to take a second to appreciate how great the stat was and then how you follow that with incredible context to let us know how great that the stat was. That was a game seven level set me down. All right, proceed to your next.
Thank you.
I'm disappointed he did not compare them to the Orlando Magic. I'm sure they're also a terrible team that you could.
I'm not
have used,
doing that.
But nonetheless,
I'm not
noted.
Doing that. We won the lottery. I'm in scout mode with that right now. I'm in scout mode. If you want to do a
grinding
on
tape,
that.
Grinding Chet Holmgren tape.
Yeah, the top three. It's all. Any of them can you can just plug and play with the roster that they already have. Having said that. I think, you know, it's interesting because, and Dominique's having technical difficulties again, but I wanted I'll tell an overly long, barely related anecdote if I may. But it was a GM.
Oh, we can hear Dominique, but you can't see him. Kevin, proceed.
It was a GM who called me in September because I said his team's defense was terrible. And he said, in all sports, defense, if it's the identity of your team, gets better as the season goes along. This is more pronounced in football because there's a lack of offseason practice. I mean, barely anybody practices in basketball in the offseason anyway, especially defense. But you get the identity, the rhythms, where is this guy going to be on defense, the switching, all of that stuff gets better as over the course of the season. And so this is a long way of saying that if your team is going to be elite defensively, and I believe the Celtics are, and that's why I think they can win the finals, frankly, we're going to get to that. But it tracks that there were a couple of weeks there where people said, maybe Tatum and Brown should be broken up, all of this stuff. This is a team finding its identity over the course of the season. I don't think anything is wrong with that. And I think that part of it, and I don't want to be a media critic here, but the way the NBA is discussed and diagnosed, it just kind of violent shifts in narrative from one to the next. And I think that
you've noticed that?
And I think the Celtics were victims of that a little bit. And I think that sometimes, and I know this is basically the anti-hot take, but I think sometimes when a team's figuring out an identity, just let them. Just let them and say, work in progress. We're going to hang a sign over there. Let's not lay down the take right now. Let's learn some lessons from this.
Kevin Clark's Montessori school of NBA takes. I'm like, look, you guys just go over there, play with your blocks, figure it out. We're not going to judge you. We're not going to do it. I mean, this has been, I think, the postseason in which that has been tested as much as any other, right? The whole idea of, like, even in this series, it was like, I think the Celtics are trash. Wait a minute. No, the Heat, still more trash.
I want to yell for a second. Every time I came on this show, every time I turned on First Take, every time I turned on anything, it was, can we really judge the Lakers yet? Can we really judge the Lakers? It's only January. It's only February. Let's hold off on judging the Lakers. But yet the Celtics, it's, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work. Meanwhile, the Lakers, with anybody with eyes and a second spectrum account, could see what was going on there. And the Celtics were actually building something. So I'm okay handing out, you're working on identity cards. If you're actually doing it, the Lakers are an example of a team you could judge right away. Nothing was going to work there. The Celtics were going to work.
Wow. That is the first playing of an identity card that did not have any racial implications, I think, at all, which is just amazing to me.
Welcome back, Dominique Foxworth. I gotta add this. It is not our responsibility in the media to be responsible in the takes that we have. From day, I put the obligation on the viewer to be more discerning. You must understand that between each game of playoffs, we're gonna wild. It's like when you get on Twitter, you gotta know that the takes that you are receiving on, even on there, are not all really, really good. Like, you have to be a reasonable.
We're going to be Kyle Lowry / Marcus Smart, just flopping everywhere. If you guys don't officiate this game to your liking, that is on you. We're going to get every edge we can by throwing our body in violent directions. And I cannot believe that this is happening again to Dominique's
Just so the listener and the viewer knows about blaming the viewer for listening to our takes.
That's right.
I took a particularly lost and confused rideshare service over the Brooklyn Bridge today. The guy ended up on the FDR going towards the Bronx instead of going to where they crucially film television shows for ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Which was south, not north. As you can see in the background, Kevin's shot. Yep.
And this is a real river. And mm-hmm. I shared this information with the gang here, and Dominique blamed me. He blamed me for not taking a higher grade of car service. And so I guess you can put me in the bucket with viewers of this show for just, you know, being at fault for just trying to be a consumer.
I do think Kevin Clark was racially profiled on his Uber ride. Now that I get all of the details, they saw Mark. They were like, this guy's wearing a jacket. He looks fancy. We can take him for a ride that's going to be longer than he deserves. Alabaster, where do you weigh in on this?
I weigh in that I think we need to talk about the Heat roster moving forward. Let's keep it moving, because this team, all right, yeah, they were shot away from the finals. They also have a terrible max contract in Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, who appears to be able to turn it on for the playoffs, but is not, you know, a young guy himself and doesn't really have a jump shot.
No.
Were stars in Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero that we're still unsure about after another playoff run. And my question, should the Heat run it back with this roster next season?
God, no. Who does anyone in Miami want them to run this back? I mean, the whole idea of, like, Jimmy Butler, you can play constitutionally protected hero ball for as long as you want, is not a sustainable basketball strategy. What we're going to see, Kevin, speaking of, like, okay, let's grind some offseason tape here, we're going to see a lot of Bradley Beal rumors, like, just flood every bit of the NBA media space.
We're going to see Bradley Beal rumors. We're going to see a lot of stars. And the way, and I'm not totally up on their contract situation. I know that they have some bad ones. I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
The aforementioned podcast.
Kyle Lowry is making like $39 million.
Yeah, for two more years after this, yep. I believe. So let's that seems to be settled. What the actual fix is going to be the same fix that they have all the time, which is they're going to find four guys who transferred from a Division III school to a low mid-major, and those guys are going to be playing 16 minutes a night next January, and people like Doc Rivers are going to say, how did they find this guy? And those are going to be the third and the fourth best players on the team, because that's just sort of how the Heat operate. I don't think they have the – I don't know, Pablo, you know more than me. Do they have the capability to go out and get a Bradley Beal type? It would be hard. I mean,
so
Tyler would have to be on the move, something like that.
Yeah, so in terms of like what you said first, though, I do love the idea that welcome Duncan Vincent, and Gabe Struess, and just like all of these yet more dudes,
creative players, like FIFA regens.
Exactly, the algorithm is being strained. They're trying to randomly generate names for all of these random former scrubs that are now 3-point shooters. The trade that we're going to see, though, that we're going to hear about is a trade. I think it's going to be, and Alabaster, tell me what you think of this, but I'm still on the bandwagon of the Heat are absolutely going to propose Duncan Robinson, 5 years, $90 million, Kyle Lowry, 2 years, $70 million left, plus all of the draft picks for Bradley Beal, like three firsts, whatever, some insane fee that they're going to end up paying to the Washington Wizards. Like that's going to be the move, I think.
I don't think Duncan Robinson can get value. I think you're going to – I think it's going to – I honestly think any deal involving Duncan Robinson is going to have to – if you're going to get four more years at like –
Oh, sorry. I brain farted. I meant Tyler Hero.
Yeah, I was going to say. Duncan Robinson. I was like, you're not
– It's going to be Tyler Hero plus Duncan or Kyle, and I think it's going to be Kyle. Tyler Hero is on like a restricted free agent contract, making like $7 million, I believe, like totally reasonable, actual value, very good catch by our listener, Kevin Clark.
So can I counter your trade with an even better trade? Because I think I got you here. Kyle Lowry and Tyler Hero and a couple picks to Utah, the team that needs to blow it up for Donovan Mitchell. Put him in the Heat culture.
Why would Utah do that?
They need to reset the clocks. They need more picks. They get Tyler Hero on a team-friendly deal. I think they'll like Tyler Hero in Utah.
I think they will.
I
know. I think the fans are not making this. The fans are not making the decision here. I think that
Danny Ainge might. I think he might like him. Oh, he wanted to trade up for Tyler Hero in the draft in Boston.
I love the idea of Tyler Hero needing to go under some, whatever the opposite of Queer Eye for the straight guy is, but hosted by Danny Ainge to satisfy Danny Ainge.
He just has to go just get like a bunch of Filson flannel shirts.
And he will never get a fade again. Yep. You got the number on your electric buzzer, my friend, is never going to be a smaller number than like 6 from now on. That skin fade is not going to fly in Utah. I can hear Dominique chuckle, and that's disturbing to me because I feel like he could be participating, but he's just chuckling, taking advantage of the technical difficulties.
Pablo, what can we tackle because Dominique is completely incapacitated? We could talk about how the cover two is completely solved quarterbacks, for instance. We could just talk about how great a move it was for Maryland to join the Big Ten. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are just Dominique bait that he has no chance to counter right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought when you said what topics can we tackle because Dominique has never tackled would be an appropriate place to start as well. I do think, Alabaster, I want to obey your question very briefly here because the answer is obviously no. They should not run it back. But what's going to happen in this offseason is going to be, to your point, a lot of Donovan Mitchell rumors, a lot of Bradley Beal rumors, and then it's going to be the creativity of Pat Riley to figure out how else he can make moves along the margins. And welcome back, Dominique Foxworth, for the podcast audience.
Am I back?
He has emerged. He is back.
It's working.
We've been insulting him.
It's working.
Back into existence. Thank God. Goodness.
I mean, so first of all, Tyler Hero would not be beloved despite the initial impression. I don't think he would be beloved in Utah. I feel like they might be off. They might see him and be like, oh, we like Tyler. Then they're going to follow him on Instagram and be like, oh, that's not our kind of Tyler. That's the wrong type of Tyler that you guys are trying to send our way. That aside, Maryland in the Big Ten, got to get that money. Also, tackling, for who, for what? No corner's ever been paid for tackling.
Yep. You guys don't even pay. Know that was exactly what I was going to say. So GM said that we pay him to cover, not to tackle. Dominic lived by that.
And cover two, I love cover two. I love to take a playoff every now and then.
Wow. Miss it.
That's essentially what this whole episode has been.
Just
cover, we can cover tell. Two. We can tell you love two. Taking plays off. You just missed three segments.
I'm sorry. It's not my fault. It's the internet. I mean, I take responsibility.
That's right.
The failures. And also, about your Uber driver, the point was not that you can't blame him, but you have to take responsibility. When you are asking someone who is driving a minivan, who probably also has another job, to get you somewhere, you have to calculate into that analysis that this man probably does not live in New York City and probably does not know all the turns to make, and you got to calculate in a 15-minute buffer. If you don't want that buffer, go ahead and bump it up to the next Black or VIP, and then you can be upset if you get into the back of a Black Escalade with a man with a suit on and he takes you on a roundabout way, then you can be upset. My only point is, don't be mad at the minivan man. That's all.
You know, I have minivan another job man. Too. I don't even work here.
and no one is critical of you. We all just appreciate you showing up and doing a great job. Did you see what I did earlier? I celebrated your stats. In the context, that's what you should have done with the minivan man. Should have been like, hey man, good driving, we ain't hit anything, and I'm here. Thank you.
Minivan man was like, oh, this Tyler is about to get 30 minutes extra on his commute.
I will say this. I did show up in time. I did have a buffer because I was told a lie that you had to show up 30 minutes before the show started in case there were any issues. And I appear to be the only person who believed that lie.
All right, before we have a players only meeting to hash out these differences, out there,
we gotta have them. They work. They work apparently, thanks to the Celtics. No.
Kevin, the difference is you respect when we ask you to show up 30 minutes early. I've just been beaten down and given up on trying to get Pablo and Dominique on in time. So
Dominique,
thank you.
Get out of here. Well, anyway, let's get back to the sports because you're gonna make me angry because I'm always here on time.
That's actually fair. He used to be
the
most punctual.
Brown. Yep.
All right, let's go on to the next question. And it's that we're going to talk about the NBA Finals. The Warriors are favorites in Vegas to beat the Celtics in the finals. Is that how you see it as well?
Yes. Look, Vegas. Hold on. The Vegas thing, right? Like, Vegas is trying to get people to give them money. And so by agreeing with their assessment, I do understand that I'm kind of identifying. I'm self-identifying as kind of a chump. Like, yeah, that seems right to me. Like, I want those odds. But yeah, I just watched the Celtics struggle to beat Jimmy Butler and a bunch of other guys who are terrible. And yeah, I just watched the Warriors rain threes upon the universe and basically only lose when it didn't look like they tried very hard. So yeah, I'm Warriors in seven for me, guys. That is my position. And I'm sticking to it.
Wait, you just trashed the Celtics and now they're going to take them to seven?
I am.
What just happened?
Oh, man. I appreciate that.
Hold on. Because they are a good defensive team. They are. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to deny the reality. This is the best defense in the NBA against, by the way, in the Warriors, the second best defense. I think they're going to make the series ugly. I do. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. I think it's going to be a seven-game series that is ultimately won by the team that actually has an offense that I trust.
Much like my Lyft drive this morning, there are many routes to the same destination. I think it's going to be Warriors in seven as well, but because I think the Celtics are pretty good, so I'm not...
I like the direct path that you took. I'm not here with this scenic route that Pablo's taking us on. We have to drive through the projects for a while and try to pretend as if this team is not good, despite the fact that they
knocked
off.
I didn't say they're not good. I said they could barely beat a team that was not that good.
The Heat.
Yes, the Heat. Okay, so to me, not that good.
Okay, so if you barely beat a team that's not that good, that makes you what, Pablo?
Barely better than not that good. Oh, gosh. Let's not waste any time dissecting Pablo's foolishness. I think the right answer to this is nobody knows because everybody's been wrong game after game after every single series. It's like,
Imagine getting in this Uber where Dominique's driving. No, he's like, oh, I mean, you think you wanted a ride?
Responding, well, I'm responding to Kevin. Kevin was complaining about how we have wild swings all over the place.
It's but only on the Celtics. There are justified swings. There are justified swings. The Celtics swings were not one of them.
Unjustified anyway, swings.
I would feel confident in picking a favorite in the NBA in any other season other than this one. This year's playoffs, to me at least, have felt more unpredictable. It's probably because of the number of blowouts from game to game, where it feels like a team is really good, then it feels like they're getting beaten by 50 by the Grizzly. Like that to me has made, that's the kind of the representation of this year's playoffs, is that particular series, because the Warriors were dominant, but never really completely dominant. And it feels odd and uncomfortable to me, but I'm going to pick the Celtics because defense wins championships.
Okay. Wow. I have a couple stats. It's actually via Zach Cram, who had the great stat from earlier. Steph Curry has not made more than 6 3-pointers in any game this postseason. Previously, he'd had at least 7 in his postseason runs. Hasn't had more than 34 points in a game. Previously, he'd always eclipsed 37 points in a game in his postseason run. And kind of going back to what I was talking about with the Celtics defense before, I think I agree with you, Pablo. It's going to be ugly. There are going to be games where they grind it out. The Warriors have more talent, so they're going to win. But I think it's going to be much closer than people think. And unfortunately, Pablo's circuitous route to the Game 7 thing has gotten me to a point where I can't argue against him because we're picking the same thing.
Five stars.
Yeah. No tip. Five stars, but no tip. Five stars, but no tip.
Do you ever, like, you know how they have, like, the stickers? Yeah. You can, like, give them these stickers. Have you ever given a driver stickers where it's, like, great conversationalist or stuff like that? You've never seen that?
No. Maybe it's just, I'm not giving anybody a great conversationalist sticker. That's not happening. I do not looking for conversation.
I'm with you. I don't want to chat stickers. Like, on Uber, you could give people, like, little stickers.
Oh, badges? You can give them badges.
Oh, that's what it is?
Stuff?
I don't know. I just give them money. I give them the highest tip possible. That's all I could do to assuage myself of the guilt that comes with capitalism. What?
Guys, I kind of think Celtics match up really well with the Warriors. I know they're the only team above 500 since the Warriors dynasty began. But they're so – I know. But they're so athletic and, like – would any part of you be shocked if they just, like, won this series in 5? Because I wouldn't.
We're all raising
our
hands.
The Celtics actually just won, like, comfortably.
In 5. Five. Now you lost me at 5.
I don't think it's going to be 5. I also think, by the way, Alabaster, did you see last night? They're really tired. They stopped playing basketball in the middle of the game.
When I talk about the Warriors coasted to the finals and the Celtics, like, Marcus Smart's ankle is occasionally softball sized. Al Horford, despite that he blocked that Dominique will never forget, he does seem like he has to slow down at some point, right? Like, he is also a guy who is running way over on the odometer. Robert Williams is somebody who is mostly a decoy at this point. Yep. You know, like, so the switchability of the Celtics defense, which is the thing that, again, what did the Celtics do in this postseason? Wildly impressive things. They assassinated Kevin Durant. They assassinated Giannis. They assassinated Jimmy Butler. Nobody, although you could argue that Jimmy Butler...
No basketball players were actually hurt in the process of this play. Well, a lot of them were hurt. None of them actually were assassinated.
Many were hurt. And I guess the increasing violence of the metaphor I was going to make with Jimmy Butler basically offing himself is just very morbid. But the point is that I feel like all of this leads to a team that is way, way more ground down than the Warriors. And if you're going to do the thing of, like, the medical math, like, whose triage ward is less stressed out right now, yeah, it's Golden State. And I think that does really matter.
Yep. They might get back. So go ahead. Me? Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you. Golden State is going at the same time, which was tough.
Golden State, I know this sounds silly, but I feel like one of the big issues with the Celtics is, like, handling the ball, because their point guard is, like, Marcus Smart, who's not, like, a true ball handler. And then, obviously, Jaylen Brown, the whole trope – or not trope, but one of the whole themes this whole series has been that he can't dribble the basketball. So Gary Payton II is potentially coming back from injury in this series. Yes. And I think he might be the best on-ball defender that they have. I think that's going to matter too. So that's, we're talking about the triage, but the triage matters, or the injuries, because the injuries matters with who's going to be hurt and what impact they're going to have. I'm not sure how important Robert Williams versus Kevon Looney is as much as it is Gary Payton II allowing the Celtics to actually get into their offense.
By the way, the reason I let you go is because we have no idea how long your internet connection is going to last in
good
any
work,
second.
Good work.
So we have to
quarterback. Yeah,
a very Jimmy Butler approach, by the way. Yes, got to get this in now because who knows how long you're going to be around for.
Who knows what the future holds. If you're an energy team and you're a defense team and you're really tired, that's bad. That's why I think that if it goes seven, we might see the exact same thing we saw last night, and it's going to be a better team that's going to be able to take advantage of that. So I certainly don't think it's going to be in five, because I think they're going to have tired legs in games one and two is my guess.
Yeah, and there's going to be more rest in between games, blah, 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 but yeah. Yeah, Alabaster, where do you want us to go next in this ride from?
One more question. We're going back to the triage ward, because these are two guys who have spent a lot of time on training tables in their NBA career. And these are also guys who have spent time in Golden State and Boston and left because they wanted to go to their own situation. How should Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving feel about this finals matchup?
Oh, man. I hate and love this at the same time. I hate that we're doing the thing where we drag two guys who truly have nothing to do with the teams involved into a conversation about the teams involved. I love it because it's funny. It is objectively funny that this happened.
It's not. I mean, I don't know. I don't see the – I understand the point. And Alabaster is a known Kevin Durant hater. And, I mean, most people in media are known Kyrie Irving haters. This just feels like people wanting to make them feel something that they don't actually feel. I don't think Kyrie Irving is losing any sleep over this. And I think Kevin Durant, as we have learned year after year, is probably smoked up somewhere feeling pretty good about himself. They don't care. And I don't care that they don't care.
It's touch and go whether or not they're aware that this happened, quite frankly.
Good for them. They shouldn't be.
They did what? Okay. I agree. I mean, it reminds me a little bit, Dominique, of the AFC last year, where it was so stacked with talent. And there were five or six teams that should have won the Super Bowl from the AFC. And instead, damn Joe Burrow and like five really good players decided to start beating dudes. And it reminds me a little bit of that, where every we're all dorks and we sit around talking about roster construction and salary cap and this guy's window, this guy's rookie contract, all that stuff. And then Joe Burrow was like, what if I just became a badass and we played pretty good defense and we just defied all logic and beat the Chiefs, who would knock the Bills out of the playoffs. The Titans have this great culture. Don't care. I got Joe Burrow. It reminds me a little bit of that, where they're just poking holes. And if you're a front office, this happened in the AFC. If you're a front office, you're doing deep introspection, wondering why you're not in the finals right now. And I think there's a lot of that going on right now, not with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, as we discussed, but with Sean Marks, with Milwaukee right now, with a bunch of places right now where you're saying, okay, what can we do? Because this seems like a low bar to clear.
I think that most of the names that you mentioned can explain why they're not there. The Bucks is Middleton got hurt.
Sure.
And the Nets is we put our trust in Kyrie Irving and James Harden. Like, I don't think it's hard. There's not a lot of soul searching. You don't need to go through the spreadsheets and figure out where the decision went wrong. It's relying on people who physically and emotionally sometimes are flimsy. So you don't need to blow everything up. And the AFC analogy is apt. Nobody in AFC needs to blow everything up because Joe Burrow turned into Joe Flacco for 1 year. Oh, yeah, and I meant that. And made a ridiculous playoff run. You don't need to blow it up. Just stick to what you're doing, and you'll be fine. Unless you're the Heat, who I guess are the Titans in this analogy.
They are. An
unfair number one seed who thrives on defense and has an old-school offensive style. If you're them, then you got to blow it up, which the Titans seem like they're doing, and Miami maybe also.
Wow. I feel like that was very insulting to the Heat, just based on the Titans comparison.
What? Also, they're not unfair number one seeds. They won the most games. We're not assigning.
I said unfair. I didn't mean unfair. Unlikely.
Paper,
I guess.
Paper on paper. Yeah. Paper Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, they were unlikely preseason. No one picked them. Alabaster really has the interjection though.
Yeah.
Bad was the word, I think.
Can we go back to the Kevin Durant of this? That this Please. Guy thinks of himself as one of the 10 best players of all time. He went to the Warriors. They sacrificed all of their depth to get him. In him leaving, they filled that vacuum by getting D'Angelo Russell, then Andrew Wiggins. They were able to replace Kevin Durant's production with all of this, you know, roster ingenuity because they're such a good organization. Kevin Durant built his own team because he wanted to prove he could do it by being the best player on the team, which he was not in Golden State. All he cares about is basketball, and he's at home because he got dominated by Jason Tatum in the first round when they got swept. He has to feel, you know, something about this, that the situation monster he created is a losing monster.
So I agree that Kevin Durant definitely cares about this more than he would like us to think that he does. Mm-hmm. I also believe that when you start a monologue with the two words, this guy, you kind of tip your hand as to your feelings about the guy in question.
You're just a hater. And somehow you're trying to make us believe that this like collection of like role players has actually like filled a Kevin Durant size void. Like Kevin Durant is one of the 10 best players of all time, no matter what happens after this. Like, stop it. You're just a Kevin Durant hater. And this team, they would trade all of those role players today.
Question.
So do you think that they wouldn't get rid of all of those players now to get Kevin Durant back? Like, stop.
We have 40 seconds, and we're going to do top 10 players of all time.
Yeah, we're not going to do it. Let's talk about let me tell you a slightly embarrassing story. I opened my Twitter. I'm carrying Katie's water. I opened my Twitter last night, and I saw a bunch of white people tweeting about fam slapping somebody with a PH. And I was like, man, do white people just not know how to say fam? I thought they were just saying like, damn, fam slapped this dude for like two tweets. I was like, do white people think it's spelled with a PH like how we used to spell fat? And I was very confused. It's an embarrassing admission. Oh, a baseball player whose last name is actually PHAM is out here slapping fools.
This is not how I wanted to note that Tommy Pham is part Asian, but here we go.
We got one bonus topic for you, by the way. This is Kevin's Lyft driver, our friend the Queen, who tweeted, debatable if it started at 12:25 instead of 12:30.
Accurate. No, yeah. Dominique would be on the screen. He just wouldn't be able to talk.
No, the problem was I just need to restart my computer. Like, that's always the solution. Just restart it, guys. Let that be a tech lesson to you all. Have an issue, don't try to fix it. Restart that thing.
Wow.
Like the AFC teams.
Fam.
Don't need to blow
just
it
restart
up.
Restart it. Fam.
Apologies to Jalen Brown. Really, we mentioned... You mentioned Ryan Tannehill as often as we did you. That was maybe an oversight.
Is that how we spell it, fam, now?